Good morning, everybody, and thank you for coming to hear my presentation. I'm first going to speak just a little bit about the background on phosphorus-sorbing materials, in particular about material screening for phosphorus reduction, and a little bit about protocols for determination of phosphorus retention capacities. Then I will present some of the materials that we tested, that I tested around the world, and I will move to steel slag because for the past 10 years I worked mainly with steel slag material for phosphorus reduction. I will present a little bit about our technology PhosphorReduc and about my small business, some applications and performances, and conclusions. So I don't know if people in this audience are aware, but I'm proud to be one of the four pioneers in the world who started research on sorbing materials for phosphorus reduction and treatment in early 1990s, along with Lena Johansson, worked on steel slugs in Sweden. Robert Mann worked in Australia, also on steel slugs. Tom Zhu worked in Norway on light expanding clay aggregates. And I worked mainly on shale byproduct from brick production while doing my PhD at Edinburgh University in Scotland. We all did at the time in early 1990s PhDs on phosphorus removal from wastewaters using granular materials, mainly in conjunction with constructed wetlands technology, different technology for wastewater treatment. And we all started with the fact that has been known for over 100 years in wastewater treatment industry that materials had to be rich in iron, aluminum, and calcium oxides. Ideally, they had to have a high phosphorus absorption capacity. Most importantly, they had to have appropriate physical and chemical properties, including all that were presented by Professor Elliott and Professor Kopman, specific surface area, hydraulic conductivity, particle size distribution, pH, etc. And ideally, they should be cheap and locally available. I always say to people, you know, after working for so many years in this field, I have my reasons why I work with steel slag, but I am not going to advocate that this is better material than wastewater treatment residues or other materials used, you know, in other places. The thing that I did want to stress out in this audience is that, you know, when we started looking at granular materials, mainly various industrial and natural byproducts, industrial byproducts and natural materials for phosphorus removal from wastewaters. We took the method from standard soil science. We are all starting with the standard 24 batch experiments in which we have six different variables that can affect our results. And apart from these six variables, we then use Langmuir and Fronisch most frequently, but other isotherm equations also to estimate phosphorus retention capacities of these materials. The problem here is that, you know, we have seen this for the past 20 years all over the world. Like when we use minimum, you know, five different five concentrations, some people will go to five, some people will go to 500 milligrams per liter, which will greatly affect our results. During my PhD back in early 90s, we came up to, you know, at least some ways to standardize this 24-batch experiment. And, you know, I found out that, you know, we have to have minimum 10 to 20 grams of, you know, material in the jar if you're using granular materials, mass to solution ratio 1 to 20. It's actually better not to use the electrolyte, and, you know, the speed of shaker was also very important. So since my studies in Edinburgh, I worked at university at Ecole Polytechnique in Montreal in my postdoc before coming to University of Vermont, and you know, I dedicated significant amount of my career in looking into trying to advance determination of phosphorus retention capacities, because this is where we all start before ever going to apply a particular material in the field or in some new practice for phosphorus removal from wastewater. So we showed that the ASTM method for 24 batch type measurement of contaminant sorption by soils and sediments is much simpler and more accurate method for determination of phosphorus retention capacities. We also have less opportunity to make mistakes because there is no need for five different phosphorus solutions which largely overestimate the phosphorus retention capacity of the material, and also there is no need for isotherm equations which don't always fit. So I also demonstrated over the past 10 years in many publications that using the Langmuir equation to model granular materials experimental data can lead to biased and unrealistic estimates of the absorption parameters in the field. And finally, we provided enough scientific evidence that showed that the only way to really find out what is the maximum phosphorus retention capacity of certain material is to conduct longer-term column studies in laboratory. Sometimes they can be 8 weeks, sometimes it will take 6 months. It depends on the material, of course, that you're using. So I obviously love rocks, and this is what I've been doing, for the past 15 years. I tested more than 80 materials in different laboratories in the world. I will not go through all of them. I just want to show that actually during my doctoral studies, I was still using, Langmuir and Fronisch equations to determine phosphorus absorption capacities of materials. It was during my postdoctoral research in Canada when we tested 57 different materials that we found out that, there is an obvious need for standardization of the method or to use different method because we had, difficulties to model. We got very, very odd results. So this is when we started back in 99, we started to use ASTM method for selection of materials for phosphorus retention capacities. I still regularly screen materials for phosphorus retention whenever we are approached by different companies. Of all these 80 materials back in 99, we started working with electric arc furnace steel slag. It's a mini mill as opposed to blast furnace slag. Majority of people work with blast furnace slag. We used electric arc furnace steel slag because we had a source near Montreal where we were at the time, and it showed the most desirable of physical chemical properties and the highest phosphorus retention capacity in comparison with other 56 different materials that we tested over 3 years in batch and long-term column studies. It also showed a higher phosphorus removal efficiency than other steel slag types because we collected 8 different steel slag types across Canada and wanted to compare which one was the best for phosphorus removal. At the time, we worked with fish farm effluents, so it's quite actually similar to urban runoff because phosphorus concentration is very, very low and we have large volumes of water. But we tested these materials at both low and high phosphorus concentrations, like what would be representative of urban and agricultural wastewater. Back in 2002, I discovered that electric arc furnace steel slag also has this phosphorus regeneration or phosphorus rejuvenation phenomena, which had been observed in previously in soils. Back in 1974, it was observed to occur in soils that when you have long-term applications of sewage to soil, when the soil drains, it rejuvenates its phosphorus retention capacity. this feature of steel stock really fascinates me personally. I still don't know after all these years like why it's occurring, but I have not observed it any other steel slag type. So it's very, very important, especially for field applications for agriculture and urban runoff, in other applications as well. But in particular in these field applications, because we can use natural hydrological cycle and have like, you know, longer lifespan of the filter. And the material is of course cheap and locally available. And already in 1999, there was quite large evidence in the international literature that other steel slag types, like blast furnace steel slag, removes phosphorus efficiently from various wastewaters. Equally important, you know, the use of steel slag for phosphorus removal has been known for 2 decades. The first study was conducted in Japan by Yamada et al. In 86. The three most commonly investigated steel slag types are blast furnace, electric arc furnace steel slag, and iron melter slag is only produced in New Zealand. We have here in the audience Dr. McDowell. He'll hopefully speak about iron melter slag. I had the pleasure to work in New Zealand with iron melter slag back in 2004. So I just wanted to move faster here that, you know, based on all of my research at the University of Vermont for the past 6 years, we opened a small business, Phosphoredux, for phosphorus reduction. I live in Quebec, I work in University of Vermont. It had to read in both languages, so that's why we have such an odd name. And here I just wanted to show, that we have, here we are. This is our ASTM method, and we have on the y-axis, we have a coefficient of phosphorus absorption, so we cannot know the value of phosphorus absorption, but we can compare very well. The higher the coefficient of absorption, the higher is phosphorus retention capacity of the material. And particle sizes plotted here are different because I took this data from various studies, I just wanted to show where we stand in comparison with other reported values from the literature. I started my research at University of Vermont back in 2004, and I'm director of Constructive Wetland Research Center at University of Vermont, which allow us a lot of possibility to apply for funding and do various, test various small scale column and pilot scale experiments for agricultural wastewater treatment. In this case, it's concentrated dairy farm, effluent and barnyard mix. And these are my graduate students. I just wanted to show to you, to give you some ideas of the research that we're doing for point pollution treatment. And we had over 8 different projects, and the results showed excellent treatment efficiencies, removing up to 95% of phosphorus from point pollution sources, 80% from non-point pollution sources. We had quite good removal of suspended solids, excellent reduction of E. coli. I still didn't have time to publish that paper, but I hope to submit by the end of the year. And we have quite good reduction of metals and minerals as well. Steel slag filtration is also very cost efficient and beneficial to the environment. The material is very cheap because it's basically a recyclable co-product from steel slag manufacturing, often considered as waste. If you're going to use this material in traditional wastewater treatment, we don't really need chemical addition. We don't need to add iron or aluminum salts because we already have iron and aluminum in steel slag. We will minimize sludge accumulation. We also have minimal land area requirements because the filtration material is so efficient in phosphorus removal. We mainly use gravity in our systems, and we have minimal or no energy requirements. The material has longer lifespan than other filter materials, and very, very important aspect. 2 years ago, we started the research on material reuse as a soil amendment or commodity fertilizer. And we showed that electric arc furnace steel slag actually can be used as a slow phosphorus release fertilizer. We compared it with triple superphosphate. So that was absolutely great funding. And I currently collaborate with Professor Renman, Guno Renman from Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. We are actually looking, we're taking the next step. We're looking at phosphorus recovery from on-site filtration technologies, from various industrial byproducts. Professor Elliott mentioned that you know, we can have a lot of problems with regulatory framework, all aspects of problems. I will not go into that, but I just wanted to show here because some of most frequently questions that I get on the conferences is what about chromium concentration in slag and what we're going to do about chromium. It definitely has to be tested for each type. If you're going to use steel slag from Pennsylvania or, you know, in Indiana or in Quebec or Vermont, you have to test your steel slag. It's not enough just to have, you know, every steel slag mill has to provide MS-DOS materials and you have your concentration of metals and chromium, but you have to do your own leaching tests and, you know, to see whether you actually do leach chromium or not. We had a filter at University of Vermont that treated highly concentrated dairy effluent and barnyard waste for over 600 days. And we had, you know, influent here, and there were two small filters in series and constructed wetland at the end of the system, like a train treatment. And we showed that, you know, in from the slag material that we use from electric arc furnace steel slag from Montreal, we had no chromium concentration. However, when we compared our material with electric arc furnace steel slag from Albany, New York, they did leach chromium. So it's really like very important to test. So I will move now to some pilot projects that we had across Vermont and in other places. Following the beginning of our research on dairy farm effluents at University of Vermont Constructive Wetland Research Center, I managed to get several small grants. I'm a research professor, 100% funded through grants, so it's really, you know, hard sometimes to get funding for research. But we managed to get the EPA 319 grant, and they wanted us to test steel slag filtration for industrial park, industrial runoff, agricultural tile drainage, and urban stormwater treatment. The problem was that we had only $20,000, and they wanted to have three sites. There was no, no money to install automatic flow meters, etc., etc. So it was, you know, these were quite, these were like the very first projects that we had possibility to make as pilot projects across Vermont. So the first one was basically, I didn't show the picture, but I think Anthony did. There was just like one barrier in a ditch. This was the follow-up project with two barriers in the ditch, and you know, it was just, you know, it's I think 600 cow farm in Olberg, Vermont, and we set, you know, the barrier. It had about 8 tons of slag, and we only had possibility to monitor for 3 months in fall of 2006, and you know, these are data from you know, the mass reduction presented here. We didn't have in this project a flow meter, so it's based on cross-sectional area, so the results should be treated with caution. But we did have quite significant suspended solids reduction, and, you know, we had quite all right dissolved phosphorus reduction of 50% in this case. So following that project, you know, the regulators, you know, they gave us grant, but they imposed a lot of problems because we had to work with small box. We had to, you know, we couldn't have flow measuring equipment. We had a lot of limitations with what we could do. And so in the end, I said, okay, let us take the known volume of, you know, of the box and let us call it, you know, a box in a ditch and see what happens and how much we can remove. And this is again based on, I mean, although graduate student, you know, was measuring flows and was there on rain events, et cetera, against, it's just based on the cross-sectional area. So the results should be treated with caution, but at least we did have possibility to collect results, you know, and we also had possibility to see that contrary to what I believed personally, our boxes did not fly away during winter in Vermont. We started our investigation, you know, in the summer of 2007 until the first frost, and then we went back during the springtime, you know, during the snow melt, and it was just, you know, very impressive to see that such a small volume of you know, slag managed to reduce orthophosphate by 60% and TP 70%. And this is just, you know, for the two, this is in and out for the first and the second, you know, box in a ditch. So we had a similar thing at, you know, tile drain in St. Albans Bay. St. Albans Bay has incredible problems with algae blooms, and it's a big, big, big concern in Vermont. And so we had agricultural tile drain, and again, even if it was agricultural tile drain, we could just do the same thing, just put the box in a ditch and see whether we can reduce, you know, any amount of phosphorus or not. Again, just looking at, you know, flows connected like by the student manually here and there and cross-sectional area, we had around 60% reduction in dissolved and total phosphorus. These small projects helped us. University of Vermont encouraged me to found a small business that I already mentioned. You know, we were two people, myself, Hugo Picard, operations manager. We also have Eamon Twoig, project manager, and Chris Rottler, who is business manager. And it was only when we established a company in 2007, actually more in 2008, that it gave us opportunities for more projects. We now have two patents pending. One is for non-point pollution treatment that we submitted in 2006. We should know about it sometime in December or January. And we recently submitted another one specifically for residential wastewater treatment. Having company established helped me out to go out of Vermont, and I collaborated with people in, you know, in Virginia, in Loudoun County. They were very much interested in dry pond retrofits, and they wanted to have in this particular site, they wanted to have a constructed wetland and steel slag filter combination to provide treatment. It's actually not just industrial, it's also forested and agricultural land, and it all comes here. It was very, you know, difficult site to monitor. There was no, it was at the time of the beginning of economical crisis. Unfortunately, there was never time to, there was never a financial possibility to obtain results and monitor this site. Later on in Vermont in 2008, Mr. Jim Pease from Stonewater Section of Department of Environmental Conservation approached me, and he said, you know, they designed this swirl basin at Morrisville Plaza in Vermont to treat urban runoff, and he basically just wanted, you know, here are solids, slag is somewhere there, and he asked us to bring, we did bring this time two ISCOS, two automatic flow meters. And he wanted to see whether this is, you know, solids and slag would be on that end. He wanted to see whether the incorporation of steel slag in a swirl basin would aid in phosphorus and metals removal. And we actually obtained about 35 to 40% of dissolved phosphorus removal, even though there was literally no contact between slag and water. I mean, it was just like placed, you know, on a geotextile, it was very poorly designed. I just provided the material. I was not allowed to design the site. And finally, we got the project last year, again funded by Environmental Protection Agency to assess phosphorus reduction from agricultural tile drains. Again, because of the difficulties with regulatory frameworks, it took us 8 months to get the site because we were obliged to prove to our regulatory agency that we were obliged to obtain beneficial use steel slag permit, even though I had like at that point maybe like 8 different projects with steel slag in Vermont and other places. So it set our project back quite a lot. And what we did here, we have 100 acres of land, we have a tile drain in the north side. This is where our system was installed, and this one has no system installed. It cannot really serve as control, but the funding agency obliged us, you know, to sample and to kind of see the difference there. And what happened, you know, we only got the you know beneficial permit you know paperwork done in June. So the last rains in May and June, they did show, you know, quite a lot of eutrophication in the farm ditches. But then we had no rain whatsoever until October. And this is our torpedo. What is happening here, we have a tile drain. We have distribution box. This was on the day of installation. Now it looks more, you know, it's embedded more properly. And, you know, we are collecting here. We have like an extension for the high flows. And, we, you know, we have automatic flow meters basically, so we can take both flow and concentration, you know, before and after our steel slag filter. It doesn't need to be this size. This is like a large, very large field, and you know it's not completely filled with slag. It looks like torpedo because we got the material quite cheap. It can have different shapes. And this was our like first rain event that occurred on 1st of October. We were waiting for a rain from July when we installed. And, you know, I just wanted to show you over time here, it was a rain event that lasted literally 16 hours. You know, the dark bars are, you know, present loading. So I took like flows that we measure and concentrations per hour. And, you know, the average, this is average in, the blue line is average out. We had just like 25% reduction, 25 to 27% reduction from that one single event. We had many more rain events since then, but I only got data like 4 days ago, so I didn't have a chance to plot them. I have one more slide. Okay, I will not show. These are just some that I wanted to show that, you know, work that we do in Taiwan. You know, that we did for residential wastewater treatment, which led to lakes restoration for stormwater treatment and agricultural runoff treatment. I've just got back from there recently. So if I don't have any more conclusions. Do you have any questions? No, no questions. Okay. Thank you.
We can take one question, actually. Go ahead, Pete.
Yes, you've got a tremendous amount of practical experience in applying these. You de-emphasize the need to standardize for chemical testing on particle materials. Can you speak a little bit to, you know, hydraulic properties and what you're looking for in terms of hydraulic properties? And then the design of them, you know, trying to address the issue of bypass flow. It seems like the failure of all of these is going to be in association more with the hydrology and during the kind of events when we're moving phosphorus. That phosphorus bypassing the actual filtration system.
I can on break, because I don't know if I start, I mean, I don't know if I have the time. Yes. But for hydro, you know, for the high flows and for the, I worked in this for 15 years. So in my design, I spent a lot of time at mastering the way we design the system to, you know, avoid problems with high flows. And I cannot reveal all of that because it's like a completely new research. But you know, if you email me, I'll be happy to answer any questions.